There is no doubt that Timothy was more than just a rank teenager when Paul wrote to him and said, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example the believers in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity." 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. We use that passage many times because it refers to youth and the fact that even young people need to be conscious of the example that they set. As parents, I'm afraid that many times some of us have lost touch with what it was like to be a teenager. Perhaps because that's just too far back to remember. Or it could be that we're so busy now dealing with the things that we deal with that we can't really go back that far in time and bring those things up. The temptations, the constant pressure from peers to conform, the downright difficulty involved in balancing a relationship with God and friends who are not Christians, sometimes it becomes a tremendous burden to deal with. It would be nice if we could somehow just remove our kids out of that kind of situation, or at least insulate them in some way from ever coming into contact with the world's influences. But then that really wouldn't be good for them either, because there are so many things that they have to learn by and through the application of the principles of righteousness. But we know that as long as they are alive, they're going to be tempted. They're going to be tested. They're going to be under that constant pressure. To make matters worse, many times even parents are struggling just to survive themselves, just to put food on the table and gas in the tank of the car. And of necessity, it seems like parents have little time to give to the task of helping their teenagers with their struggles. The sad truth is, some young folks will pay the ultimate price of not having the kind of guidance that they need to stand in the face of temptation in these difficult times. If possible, I think it would be good if we as parents could somehow have a refresher course in understanding a little bit more about what our children are up against, especially what they're up against when we're not around. Not long ago, Brother David Banning, who preaches for a congregation of the Lord's Church in Texas, told about talking to a group of young people about heaven. He said at the end of their study together, he handed out a handful of blank cards, one to each one of those teenagers in that class. And he asked them this question. He said, "If you miss heaven, what will be the one thing that keeps you out? What is it that you struggle with the very most?" And he asked them to write their answer down anonymously on the card, to give it back to him. You know, sometimes there is nothing that will jolt a parent into reality like hearing a teenager bare his or her soul about what he or she is struggling with spiritually. Because for some reason, sometimes we never seem to get around to thinking about that on behalf of our kids. Those young people put their answers down on the cards, And I've borrowed a lot of that information from Brother Banning, and the things that those teenagers said are going to form the outline of our study tonight. Number one, one said, "I'm guilty of lust." Quite frankly, that doesn't surprise me, given the condition of the world in general and the culture which seeks to win the souls of our young people over and over and over on a daily basis. It's not like most parents aren't doing anything in the face of this battle for the souls of their children. There's a lot of hand-wringing going on. Usually it's accompanied by a chorus of "woe is me's" and "what are we going to do's." You know, we can sit around and talk about how coarse and vulgar things are becoming, but until we teach our children and then continuously reinforce in their minds the fact that God's people live by a higher moral standard than our culture supports, until we do that, we're going to be losing some of our young people. Our young ladies need constant reminders about what the Bible says about modest apparel. And they need some plain teaching, quite frankly, about the kind of things that can go on in a young man's mind when he watches an immodestly dressed female. And when mothers dress their teenage daughters up in revealing dresses and send them off to proms and dances because it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing or they'll never have this chance again, they're not doing them any favors. Our young men need to be continually reminded of the dangers of lust. The reality of what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 28, I'm afraid has yet to sink in with a lot of people, both young and old. In that verse, Jesus said, "But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Few things are as vulnerable as the mind of a young man when he's exposed to a skillful temptress of any age. And Solomon said in Proverbs chapter 6, beginning in verse 20, "My son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. Bind them on your heart always. Tie them around your neck. When you walk, they will lead you. When you lie down, they will watch over you. And when you awake, they will talk with you. For the commandment is a lamp, and the teaching a light, and the reproofs of discipline are the way of life, to preserve you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress. Do not desire her beauty in your heart, and do not let her capture you with her eyelashes." That's really what it says. Look it up. Isn't that simple? Isn't that plain? Isn't it so true? Lust can certainly cause a young man to miss heaven. Another one of those teenagers said, "I'm hiding my light. I'm hiding my light." You know, there's a certain amount of encouragement in that answer. Not because a teenager isn't providing the right kind of example, but because that teenager at least understands that he or she has a responsibility to be the light of the world. The duty and the responsibility that we have to lead those around us in the right way is something that we've got to make our young people more aware of. One of the things that makes that task difficult is they sometimes don't have very good examples to follow. Jesus said, "We're the salt of the earth, the light of the world," Matthew 5:13-16. But as we all know, sometimes being that city set on a hill is not an easy task. Being different from everybody around you, living godly in an ungodly world, well, it carries a price tag. There'll be some times when we'll be ridiculed. There'll be some times when we'll just be left out. That's why it's vitally important for all of us as parents and as grandparents even to stand shoulder to shoulder with our young people and to help them push back that assault from Satan. Not only do they need our help, there is an example that we need to be setting for our kids. They need to see us let our light shine. They need to see us invite a waitress to worship services. They need to see us walk away from a guy with a bad mouth. When they see our courage, it'll help them with theirs. Evangelism is the daily duty of every disciple, not just the ones who are over 18 and out of college. Have our kids seen us put that into practice? They need to be included in our training, in the training that we do at home and in the church. We need to be equipping our youth to reach the lost. There is no one who can be any more effective among his peer group than a teenager who is serious about what Paul said in Philippians 2:15. That you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish in the world of a crooked and twisted generation, or in the midst of a crooked and generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. I'm hiding my light. Number three, one said simply, "I'm not praying. I'm not praying." If we want our kids to develop a meaningful relationship with God, if we want our kids to go to heaven, we need to teach them how to pray. I'm afraid a lot of people are left with the idea that, you know, we just need to figure this out on our own. We treat prayer like it's some kind of inborn ability that everybody just kind of sort of comes to terms with on their own. But that's not so. People have to be taught to pray. In Luke 11:1, it says, "Now Jesus was praying in a certain place, and when he finished, one of his disciples said to him, 'Lord, teach us to pray as John taught his disciples.'" That could very well be one of your kids saying that. So we need to sit down with them. And we need to spend some time talking with them about prayer. We need to teach them what to say. What kind of things should be included? It's always helpful to examine some of the prayers that are recorded in the Bible to learn from them. One of the best ones is in Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 4 through 11, where Nehemiah prays to God with praise, confession, and requests. Teach our children how to speak to God from the heart, not some kind of formal address where every word or every phrase is rehearsed and recited. Help them learn by giving them opportunities to listen to us pray. Spend some quiet time at the end of every day with them in prayer. Now, obviously, that's going to be a real challenge, particularly if a parent doesn't have much of a prayer habit himself or herself. Maybe this is something we all need to work on together with them. All of us learning and growing in the process. There's one more I want to share with you. The fourth one said, if I miss heaven, it's because I've let my friends trip me up. You know, my friends are supposed to be the good guys in my life. They're supposed to be the people who are there for me, who are always ready with some good advice, the kind of folks who are really always wanting the best for me. Of course, the reality is that there are basically two kinds of people in the world: those who will help me get closer to God and those who will keep me from getting closer to God. Proverbs chapter 1, again, beginning at verse 8, hear, my son, your father's instruction. Forsake not your mother's teaching, for they're a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. You know, I guess sometimes the ones that we're calling our friends aren't really our friends at all. And it's really important that we make sure we haven't left our kids out in the world on this one. As parents, we need to stand with our kids and make sure we help them connect with the right crowd as much as we possibly can. This may indeed involve some critical decisions that our children just really don't need to be making on their own. Oh, sure, if you ask them, they'd say that they're fully capable of making those decisions, but the reality is they don't know that they're not really equipped to make those decisions. Well, the question is, how can I do that without coming across like a meddling mom or a controlling dictator of a father? Well, there are some definite guidelines that I think we could look at as we close our thoughts on this subject tonight. Number one, start early. It'll be a lot easier later on if we've started when they were very young in trying to help them and point them in the right direction to the right kind of friends. From the time your kids start associating with other kids, start talking to them about good and bad influences. Number two, get to know the crowd. Now, it may mean that that's saying that your house is the place to be. And that'll take some extra effort. But there's no better way than to get to know the neighborhood kids, that is, than when they're at your house. Number three, steer them toward healthy relationships. Make it convenient for them to spend time with the kids who help them do the right thing. Number four, steer them away from unhealthy relationships. Make it inconvenient for them to spend time around the ones who are a bad influence. That brings us to number five, and it's simply be a parent. You are the parent. You're in charge. I'm not sure where we ever came up with the idea that a seven-year-old needs to be in charge. That a 12-year-old has the capacity to make life-changing decisions. Parents need to be parents. God has put us in that position of authority for a very good reason. And when it comes time to intervene, draw a line, or even stop that damaging friendship, oh no, they won't like it. Sure, they'll be mad for a week. Boy, that sounded mean. I didn't mean it that way. But you know, that's our job. That's what God is holding us accountable for. We're parents. Someone has observed, and I believe correctly so, that there were all kinds of people who boarded that doomed ship, the Titanic, on its maiden voyage across the North Atlantic. There were rich people and poor people, business tycoons and common laborers, important people, obscure people. But you know, in the end, everyone on that boat that night was listed on one of only two possible lists. Those who were saved and those who were lost. We want all kind of great and wonderful things for our kids and our grandkids as they grow into adulthood. But I think all of us would agree that any or all of those great, wonderful things would be worth trading off if we could somehow know for absolute certain that they were going to be on God's saved list. Let's prepare them to make the right kind of decisions while they're within our reach. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation, we invite you to respond as we stand and sing.